JC Corcoran Podcast.
But I just want
you
to
see yourself living in St. Louis 30 years from now?
Probably.
Really?
Yeah, because of Sam's career and mine. Yeah.
Even at 62.
Karen Kelly in the Breakfast Club. It has a nice ring.
Who's this on the Wolfman telephone? Hello.
Is this about the apartment on Kings Highway?
Is this about the what?
Apartment.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a two bedroom. The shower works fine. And what other questions do you have?
How much is it a month?
$750.
I mean, is it all? It includes
heat, electric, air conditioning, and don't let the smell bother you. It hasn't bothered the last two or three people who have lived there. We're not sure it was a skunk. Most people, when they guess, they say skunk. But it doesn't bother most people.
Okay.
Now, the guy above you, he was never convicted.
Okay.
And there's only one other problem. My pet dog, Sparky, I can't keep him anymore, and he has to stay in the apartment.
In the apartment that I'm
Yes, in fact, I'll tell you what. I'll knock off $100 if you continue to watch Sparky for me.
All right.
You want to think about it, or?
$650.
You know what? $600. If you watch Sparky, $600.
All right.
When can you move in?
On the first of the month.
All right. Now, you sure about Sparky?
I'm fine.
You sure about that? I don't know. Sparky, down, boy. Sparky, take it easy. Sparky, down, boy.
Is he a mean dog?
Sparky, down, boy. Sparky, down, boy. Down. If you don't make eye contact, everything's fine.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, let me put you on hold. We'll get right back to you, okay? There you go. The hell is going on?
As long as you don't make eye contact.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
The 10th of May, and it's 37 degrees in St. Louis. Are you? All right. How you doing, kids? It is Monday, the 10th of May, 2021, and you've got JC here in the JC Corcoran Podcast at jcontheline.com. Then again, you probably knew all of that. I guess that horse racing is just one of those things that I'm never going to understand. I think I've been to one horse race in my life. Maybe I've been to a couple of dog tracks, and I didn't go because I wanted to. I was in a place where there was literally nothing else going on. And so somebody said, let's go to the dog track. I go, okay, I've never been. And they're outlawing that now in a lot of places. In Florida, for example, they've got dog tracks that are abandoned now because too many people complained about the whole thing. And now you've got the winner of the Kentucky Derby testing positive for a steroid. He'll be stripped of his victory if he fails a second test. If that happens, the runner-up, was it Mandaloon? Mandaloon, I believe is how they pronounce it, will be declared the winner. And those of you who do know things about horse racing know that the owner of this horse has been embroiled in controversy for a very, very long time, having been accused of doping the horses for many, many years now. And it's just another case of somebody trying to win something without playing by the rules. Speaking of controversy, Elon Musk goes on Saturday Night Live. Some of the cast members of SNL didn't want to work with him. They thought he's a bad guy. He goes up there and really does well, not so much in his performance, he was okay, but does well in the, I guess you should say, reparation of his image. He goes out there, he brings his mom up for Mother's Day, and admits to a worldwide audience that he has Asperger's, and says that he probably is the first person ever with Asperger's to host the show. But it turns out that honor technically belongs to Dan Aykroyd. But a pretty ballsy thing to do. And also, like I said, he came off as likable for the most part, even though because of his condition and other factors, I'm assuming, he does seem like sort of an odd guy. I don't know what Todd Rundgren has to do to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The fan vote closed on Saturday. The final standings, Tina Turner, Fela Kuti. I have no idea who that person is. I've never heard. I don't even know if it's a man or a woman. But that's one of the people who finished in this whole thing. I guess I got to look that up now, find out who the hell that is. The Go-Go's, Iron Maiden, and Foo Fighters. So the Go-Go's and somebody I've never heard of ahead of Todd Rundgren. It's criminal. It's absolutely criminal. Birthdays today from Saturday Night Live. Kenan Thompson, 43. Bono is 61 today. Rick Santorum. And I love the description here. It says, a politician with a Google problem. That's putting it mildly. 63. Chris Berman. Back. ESPN, 66. Dave Mason. Very, very talented guy. Underappreciated. Classic rocker. 75 today. We just disagree. And Donovan. Mellow Yellow, Sunshine Superman, Hurdy-Gurdy Man, 75 today. He's also the father of actress Ione Skye, who was in Say Anything with John Cusack. There's a friggin' bear loose. Well, there was one loose in St. Louis until last night. This was the most talked about story ever, and it was because not so much that there's a bear loose somewhere where it shouldn't be, but places like Kirkwood and finally tranquilized in Richmond Heights. The bear was up in a tree last night, and they finally, yeah, the bear did not seem to be afraid of people, and that's a really, really dangerous thing. I mean, because they want to tell people all the time, don't bother the bear, the bear won't bother you. Yeah, that's true up to a point. The things in Richmond Heights, the Galleria is dangerous enough. Good morning, everybody. Yesterday was the anniversary of something that happened back in 1993 that was a stain not only on the city of St. Louis, because the story ended up going national, but also on the broadcasting business. And that, of course, was the racial diatribe that set off a chain of events at what at the time was called Q104 Radio, involving the team of Steve in D.C. You know, it's one of those things where, to this day, there's still people and members of the media who cover stuff like this who think that just because you're on the radio in the morning and you do some nutty stuff and get a lot of attention and stir the pot and, you know, there's controversy and everything, that everybody is the same. I just want to grab people by the lapels and shake them until their brainstem comes loose when they put me and some of my other colleagues in the same category as these two terrible, terrible people. Back when all this was going on, and I tried to explain to people that there's a huge, huge dividing line between what I was doing at the time and what they were doing at the time, and people just didn't understand it until you start really, really looking closely at the dissimilarities. But I could tell you stories from now until the cows come home about stuff that these guys were involved in that would curl your hair. And if your hair is already curly, it would straighten it. They fooled a lot of people into thinking that they were some sort of, you know, just fun-loving little morning show. They fooled a lot of people. They didn't fool me. And now another chapter in our continuing saga of Chinese space junk. All right. So the Chinese government is saying that this giant piece or pieces of space stuff that they were responsible for came crashing down harmlessly into the Indian Ocean on Saturday night, I guess it was. And there's a lot of people who don't believe them. And some of those people believe that, you know, as we go through the day today or through the week, this week, that you're going to find big pieces of space junk that have come down in populated areas and that the Chinese government was lying all the time. I guess there's some sort of code of ethics, I guess it would be, that if you send something up as a government, in this case the Chinese government, that there's a degree of responsibility for what you put up in orbit. And that if it's one of these things that is eventually going to lose power and come crashing back down to Earth, there are mechanisms where they can control that to some extent so that it doesn't come down in a populated area. And apparently the Chinese are just sort of like, huh? Yeah, we didn't really do that. the other quote unquote big story over the weekend, I was sort of laughing. Like, was this really that big a deal? Tawny Catane died at her home in Newport Beach, California on Friday morning. She was 59 years old. No cause of death has been established yet. Of course, she was in all those Whitesnake videos. Here I go again. Still of the Night, Is This Love? She was married to David Coverdale from the band at that time. Before that, she dated Rat guitarist Robin Crosby and appeared on two of their album covers, including their breakout disc, Out of the Cellar. She was also in the 1984 movie Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks. Over the years, she struggled with substance abuse. Later in her career, she married Chuck Finley, who was with the California Angels and played with the Cardinals for a number of years. They had two daughters, and you probably remember the Chuck Finley story. Apparently, they were en route. They were on a Southern California highway. He said something. She got mad about it. He was driving. She took off a stiletto heel and started beating him with it as he was driving. So people were laughing, going, your wife beat you up? It's like, well, I was trying to drive a car, and this all happened unexpectedly, even though he's like 6'7", and she's beating him with the stiletto heel, and I guess he had to go to the hospital. She hurt him badly enough for that, and that was the end of that. That usually signals the end of the relationship. I still don't know what to make of this Aaron Rodgers story up in Green Bay. I can't tell if this is for real or if it's a put-on or what the hell's going on, but a Green Bay bar now offering Aaron Rodgers free food and beer for life if he stays with the Packers. I've been telling you about this for, what, 20 years? The Hollywood Foreign Press Association. This is the people who put on the Golden Globes every year. And the thing about the Golden Globes is that it's a fantastic television show, all right? It's a media event because they have the presenters, the, you know, the celebrities and everything like that, but the, everybody in the crowd is also a major celebrity. So you have, you know, Tom Cruise sitting at a table with Jack Nicholson, sitting at the same table with Charlize Theron, whatever, and the whole place is like that. In other words, you know, you go to the Oscars or something like that, and yeah, there's people sitting there who are performers who are about to accept awards, but there's a lot of people sitting there like, who the hell is that? I don't have any idea who that is. So with the Golden Globes, they make it so that everybody there on stage and in the crowd is a major celebrity, and it's a terrific TV show, as I said. It's only one problem. The award itself is just totally bogus, completely bogus. It's like these 90 people who have some sort of link to some sort of media outlet, a lot of them sort of on the shady side. A lot of these reporters are just on the take for like a $400 Mission Impossible leather jacket, which they give to them. And then they write up a good review for the movie, whether it's any good or not. A lot of exorbitant junkets and fancy meals and mingling with celebrities and, you know, people who have no integrity whatsoever in what they do. And there's even a question as to what they do. There's one guy who owns a refrigeration company, but four times a year, he publishes a story about the entertainment business in some paper in Greece or something like that, and he gets to vote. And every dumb television anchorman and every producer who writes a story says, well, the Golden Globes are interesting because they can be an indicator of what's going to happen in the Academy Awards. Well, of course, because they're going to look at all the movies that came out that year and try to pick the good ones. But above and beyond that, but the award itself has about as much integrity as you getting a trophy for most improved bowler. Speaking of the entertainment industry, I love stories like this. People who have stage names, and then you find out what their real name is or where they came from and stuff like that. Whoopi Goldberg, how did she get her name Whoopi? Because she used to fart a lot. And she was like a human whoopee cushion, so that's where the name Whoopi came from. That's elegant. Betty White is older than sliced bread. Yes, that's true. She's 99 years old, born in 1922. First sliced bread was sold in 1928. Judy Garland, the story was that she suffered second and third degree burns after a fire stunt that went wrong while filming The Wizard of Oz. That story is false. The injury did occur, but it happened to Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch of the West. Guy Fieri's real name is Guy Ferry, F-E-R-R-Y, and he's first cousins with Prince William and Harry. That's false, but tricky. Turns out his real name is Guy Ferry, F-E-R-R-Y, but he's not first cousins with William and Harry. Megan Mullally, fired from her role in Finding Nemo for refusing to do her high-pitched Karen Walker voice from Will and Grace. That one is true. Story going around that Adam Sandler came up with a premise for Uncut Gems after losing close to $3 million in a sports bet. That's false. The movie was written in 2009. Adam didn't become attached until nearly a year later. How about the story that Benedict Cumberbatch was abducted by several men with guns while filming a TV show in South Africa? True story. 2005, he was filming the miniseries To the Ends of the Earth in South Africa. How about this one? Before starting on Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul was on The Price is Right, and he won a car nearly $30,000. Story is false, but another tricky one. He was a contestant in 2000, and he made it to the Showcase Showdown, but his bid went over by $132, so he lost. The story circulating in Hollywood is that Jeremy Renner was a makeup artist before he became an actor. True story. He really enjoyed the job, which he said was a lot better than waiting tables. Was Michelle Pfeiffer literally vacuum sealed into her Catwoman costume during the shooting of Batman Returns? True story. Says it's the most uncomfortable she's ever been. And was Bryan Cranston the lead suspect in a giant murder investigation? Yes. Somebody killed the chef at a restaurant where Bryan Cranston worked. For a brief time, Bryan was a suspect. Obviously, he was cleared. As we mentioned, Bono turning 61 today. He still hasn't found what he's looking for. Bono, it's going to get worse now because you're not even going to remember what the hell it was you were looking for. And now this.
Hi, baseball fans. This is John Gordon, the voice of the Minnesota Twins, the lineup for the Polish All-Stars. First base, Ted Kluszewski. Second base, Bill Mazeroski. Shortstop, Tony Kubek. Third base, Whitey Karowski. Catcher, Stan Lapata. Outfielders, Carl Yastrzemski, Stan Musial, and Greg Luzinski. In the dugout, Moose Gowron, Andy Pafko, Walt Jopel, Ron Swoboda, Gene Hermansky, and Tom Pachorin. In the bullpen, Joe Niekro, Eddie Lopat, Ron Paranowski, Ray Narleski, Ray Sadecki. Coaching first base, Roy Matika. Coaching third base, Dick Trzaskowski. And on the mound for the Polish All-Stars, knuckleballer Phil Niekro.
The greatest day in baseball was the day I went to see the Polish All-Stars play the greatest game in history. The stands were filled with all the fans from across the USA. It was the greatest day when the Polish All-Stars played.
Well, they had a request for that, and so that's why you got it. All right, women on Reddit sharing the things that guys do that aren't nearly as attractive as those guys think they are. For example, male nudity. Male nudity. Everything related to male nudity, pictures of male nudity in person, all male nudity. Now and forever, women are like, get over yourselves. We ain't that interested. Talking bad about other guys to make yourself seem better, or talking bad about other women to try to compliment the woman you're talking to. Calling your ex is crazy, talking about being horny, not being able to do the most basic cooking or housework, which shows you're looking for a girlfriend to be your mom, loading up on cologne, jewelry, or hair gel, persisting over and over when you've gotten a clear and definitive no, I'm not interested in you, and then making the final entry on the list, truck nuts. I'm really sorry, guys, but I gotta side with the gals on this one. And how much will it cost you to own a dog or cat? A new study found pets cost an average of about $111 per month, and since pets live an average of about 10 years, that comes out to $13,320 over the lifespan of the animal. And anybody who knows anything about Hollywood or show business will tell you that Hollywood is just the most fickle place ever. So many stories have been told about how quickly somebody can fall out of favor. One minute, you're the most popular thing. Everybody wants you. Everybody wants you for everything. They want autographs. You appear in public and people lose their minds. And the next minute, you're out on the street and nobody wants nothing from you. All right, so BuzzFeed put together a poll and they basically said, who's cool and who isn't, all right? Betty White, number one answer at 93%, followed by Tom Hanks, Adele, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, Ryan Reynolds, Lady Gaga, Jennifer Aniston, Billie Eilish, Oprah, and Angelina Jolie. Now, the list of people who made it on the uncool list. Number one answer, Kid Rock, 91%, Jeff Bezos, Ellen, Dr. Yo, Ellen, a year and a half ago, would have been right up there with Betty White on the cool list. But she pulled a Mark McGuire. You know, the whole thing of looking so genuine while at the same time just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. Ellen, number three on the list. Dr. Phil, Mel Gibson, James Franco, David Schwimmer, which I don't know what the hell he did to anybody. Justin Timberlake on the uncoolest, 64%. Adam Levine, and for some reason, at 55%, the frickin' Pope. Let's see if he gets another movie. And now this.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
If I gave you this Bud Light, are you up for whatever happens next?
Yeah, sure. Wait, do I have to drink the Bud Light?
Yeah.
Oh, then no.
What? Why?
Because Bud Light tastes like a beer that someone already threw up.
Yeah, it's like a liquid John Mayer song.
Okay, but the thing is, like, it's all about whatever happens next, so if you could...
Yeah, but it tastes like the flat soda that a homeless guy uses to rinse off birds.
Yeah, that's exactly what it tastes like. Yeah.
Okay, look, I'm not supposed to do this, but we have hidden cameras inside of this bar, and when you get outside, there's, like, going to be this huge thing for you if you could just drink this Bud Light.
You mean the beer that tastes like water strained from a gutter full of dog's teeth?
Bud Light tastes like the scared urine of a rabbit.
It's like Steven Seagal's pre-com.
Yeah, but we have like an epic night plan for you.
Okay, listen to me very, very carefully. This is important. If a nickel could urinate, it would taste like Bud Light.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Bud Light tastes like the ghost of a dead lemon.
Basically, if water could just go bad.
We have a stretch limo waiting for you guys outside with Peyton Manning in it, and he's going to take you to play a game of giant Jenga, okay? And then after that, you're going to go on one of those Virgin Galactic missions into space.
That sounds amazing. I'm just not going to do it.
All right, you know what? Just let me drink it.
What does that taste like? Describe it.
It tastes like if a raccoon ejaculated carbonated vinegar inside of an old log.
That is good. Yeah. Really nice.
Bud Light, the only beer that makes you up for literally anything else.
Which brings us to today's JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day, David Zucker. Zaz, as they used to call them. Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker. The two Zucker brothers and then Jim Abrams, responsible for, oh my gosh, everything from Airplane, Top Secret, Ruthless People, and High School High, which was a movie that David Zucker produced and directed and didn't do very well. But he came to St. Louis to promote the darn thing. And if you were around in 1979-80, not only was it a funny-ass movie, but Hollywood sort of balked at the idea of these three guys from Milwaukee operating completely outside of the Hollywood system and being responsible for one of the highest-grossing comedies of all time. There was a lot of this, who are these guys? About a year ago, I actually sat and watched Zero Hour, which is a movie that came out in the 1950s, and these guys bought the rights to that movie and then riffed on it and made fun of it, and that's what Airplane turned into. And you'll hear David Zucker talk about that here in just a minute. So many great behind-the-scenes stories of how Airplane got made. Here's our conversation back in 1996 with David Zucker.
Now tell the story about what happened. As I understand it, when you wrote Airplane and actually sent it to the agents to be distributed to people like Robert Stack and Lloyd Bridges and Peter Graves and people like that, that they read it and they didn't get it. And they were like, well, you want comedy actors to do this. You don't want real actors.
I remember we met with Peter Graves and he said, well, the script is very funny. My kids think it's funny and everything. but why do you want me? Why don't you get Harvey Korman or Don DeLuise? Those are the reigning comedy kings
Harvey
at the time.
Harvey Korman.
this is baiting all of us. And so we said, Peter, no, you are the joke. And so he understood. And then, but we got a lot of flack from our casting director who said, Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen is the guy you cast the night before.
Tell everybody about the screen test. I actually have a copy of this because you showed it back around, I guess it was 82. Tell about who almost got who got Robert Hayes' job.
That's right. You're talking about my mother. We had David Letterman came in to read for the part. And we just thought he was so funny. This is really before. before he was David Letterman.
And to see this screen test of the, it's the Ethel Merman scene near the opening of the movie, and to see David Letterman in a bed with no shirt, by the way, and no chest hair, I should point out, sitting in this thing delivering these lines that, of course, we associate now with Robert Hayes and Julie Haggerty. It was just unbelievable.
And we thought it was actually pretty good. I mean, he's funny, and he can do it, do the straight stuff, but he was so uncomfortable. He didn't want to do it. He just begged us, don't cast me in this. Yeah. It's just like you'd expect from Letterman.
You know, there were so many great subtleties in Airplane. One of the jokes that I like about the movie is the fact that you have a jet plane, but every time you have the shot of the plane, you have the propeller sound.
Right. Well,
like a prop plane.
One of the main movies that we were doing the satire on was a 1957 movie called Zero Hour.
Right, right.
Very unintentionally funny movie. And with Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, and Sterling Hayden, and Crazy Legs Hirsch.
And you had to buy the rights of that movie, didn't you?
We bought the rights to it, and that's how we got the plot, because we had no idea what a plot was. We just knew jokes. And one thing, we wanted to have this prop plane, and we really wanted to do the whole movie on a prop plane. And Michael Eisner at the time was the head of Paramount, and he said, you can't do it on a prop plane. You have to do it. This has to be a jet plane because people won't identify with it. But we said, don't you understand the brilliance of our script that it has to be a prop plane? I mean, you don't understand. Boone Well did this.
So Eisner, of course, goes to the screening of the movie, and he's got his jet, but guess what?
He's got
the sound of a prop plane.
Yes, he won the battle.
Leslie Nielsen, I mean, how did he react to, you know, initially when you approached him with the movie? I mean,
oh, Leslie was the one guy, he really got it.
Oh, uh-huh.
And in fact, he later told us, he told his agent, I don't care what you do, but get me this movie. I will do it for nothing. I will pay them.
All right. 969 Rock Illinois 399 Roll. Hi, Sean. You're on the air with David Zucker. Go ahead.
Hi, David.
Hello.
Yeah, I was wondering what it was like working with O.J. Simpson.
Oh, couldn't have seen this question coming, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you guys must have just freaked when this story happened.
It was. I totally freaked. I had no idea. I mean, he's a really nice guy. I mean, he was very, very nice. Mm-hmm. I saw him, the last time I saw him was at the rap party for Naked Gun 33 and a Third. And everybody said goodbye. I sold him my knife collection, and I never really saw him again.
Love that guy. Love those stories. Can you imagine that movie studio when they saw the final product, and here is a jet airliner, but it's the sound of a prop plane? Oh, my God. All right, that's it. Another edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast is in the can. We're here every weekday morning at 7 o'clock. Download it. Listen whenever you want. Please tell your friends that we are here every day. Back bright early tomorrow morning. Enjoy your day. Stay warm. This is nonsense for this time of year. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.